How are the Israelites supposed to come near to this holy God? And that's where Exodus ends. And that's where Leviticus begins with the words, "Then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, When any man of you brings an offering to the Lord, you shall bring your offering of animals from the herd or the flock." The word offering is from the Hebrew word korban. Korban is translated into English as either sacrifice or offering, but neither of those words accurately express the concept. The word sacrifice implies that the person bringing it is required to deprive himself of something that he cherishes. The word offering implies a payment, a fee, a tribute, or a gratuity. But God has no satisfaction in inflicting deprivation upon his children. He's not in need of tribute or gifts. A korban is not merely a sacrifice or an offering. Torah Club explains that the root of the word korban is the Hebrew karav, which can be translated to bring near. A korban, then, should be defined as something brought near. The reason it is named something brought near is that the person bringing the offering does so in order to come closer to God. The implication is that man himself cannot come near to God. God is holy. He is other, distinct, and separate from man. Therefore, man must send a substitute in his stead. The korban is the vehicle that allows man to come near to God. If we understand a korban as something brought near, we might paraphrase the first passage of Leviticus this way. Then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, When any man of you wants to draw near with something brought near to the Lord, you shall bring near animals from the herd or the flock as your thing brought near. To draw near to God is to enter communion with God. It implies entering his very presence. Inasmuch as his presence resided in the tabernacle on earth, the worshiper was able to draw near and enter into that presence, the presence of God on earth, through the offering of a korban, something brought near. To put it another way, the Hebrew word korban could be translated as gift. The Israelites were to view the sacrifices as gifts that they could bring to God. Now, does God need gifts? Of course not. In Psalm 50, he declares that he's the owner of every beast and the cattle on a thousand hills, and he says, If I were hungry, I would not tell you. The world is mine, all it contains. Shall I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of male goats? He does not need sacrifices any more than he needs our prayers or our praise. But all three of these things are things that he has enabled human beings to offer to him so that they can enjoy relationship with him. Now, this korban concept of something brought near, a gift, a voluntary gift brought to God, is a very different understanding of sacrifice than we are ordinarily taught within Christianity. We are normally taught that the Israelites brought sacrifices merely to pay the penalty for their sins. By this reasoning, the sacrifices became a sort of scapegoat. So, in Christian thought, when a man merited the death penalty, a sacrifice was made for him, and the unfortunate cow or sheep or goat was slaughtered instead of the man. An oversimplification of this concept has it that God was angry with the sinner, and he demanded punishment, even death, because the wages of sin are death. So the sinner killed an animal, and the death of the animal appeased God. God was no longer angry after the animal was sacrificed. From his perspective, at least something was killed. The angry God was appeased with the blood of the animal. But is this really what the Torah teaches? Is this really what the apostolic scriptures teach? No, not really. Sacrificial substitution and propitiation, the concept of atonement, these concepts are far more complex. Furthermore, most of the sacrifices were not offered for sin at all. This is sometimes a big revelation for Christians to realize that most of the sacrifices brought in the temple were not meant as sin offerings. It is true that there are sin offerings and guilt offerings prescribed by the Torah, but there are other sacrifices which were brought voluntarily by a glad, willing worshiper. not as a ransom for his life at all. Korban means something brought near. In Torah, the death of the animal is not necessarily a substitution for the death of the sinner. Instead, the death of the animal is a proxy to bring the worshiper near to God. It is not an appeasement of an angry God in any sense. It is a method by which God might be approached. Of course, it remains true that the lessons of life and death, sin and punishment, are indeed graphically illustrated by the sacrificial system. Without the illustration of sacrifice, we can't appreciate the holiness of God as it pertains to his righteous anger, and that the price for coming near to God actually is death. Relationship with God is not something that can be entered into haphazardly or cavalierly. Our sin means that blood must be shed if we are to enjoy communion with God. Coming close to God is an expensive endeavor. Nachmanides understood the sacrificial service in exactly those terms. He suggested that as the animal was slaughtered, the offerer should be thinking to himself that he was the one who deserved to be slaughtered. And as the animal's blood was splashed on the altar, the offerer should be thinking that it was his own blood that should be splashed on the altar. The grand words of propitiation, redemption, atonement, they're all similar in that they each communicate an aspect of repayment. Payment is never lost sight of in the whole matter of redemption. Thus, even in the voluntary sacrifices, the death of the sacrificial victim is a central issue. At the heart of the sacrificial system is the knowledge that we stand in debt to God. The first seven chapters of Leviticus list and describe five different classes of sacrifice. There's the burnt offering, the korban olah, the grain offering, the mincha, the peace offering, the zevachim shalamim, the sin offering, the chata'at, the guilt offering, the asham. We will briefly learn something about each one of these, but we'll take some extra time with the burnt offering because it lays down the paradigm for the sacrificial system. Leviticus 1:3 says, if his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer it a male without defect. He shall offer it at the doorway of the tent of meeting, that he may be accepted before the Lord. The burnt offering is the most fundamental and basic of all the sacrifices. In Hebrew, it is called the Korban Olah. An Olah is unique because it's the only offering completely dedicated over to God. The ancient Israelite had absolutely nothing to gain by offering an olah. It benefited no one. The olah was not an offering for sin or for guilt. The offerer of the olah did not profit from it in any way. There were no choice cuts of meat retained. There was no ritual purification that resulted from an olah. No expiation. Nothing but a complete giving over, a reckless surrender to God. The very word olah suggests this. Its most literal translation is rising, or that which rises, going up, olah. It's called an olah, that which goes up, because this offering was completely consumed on the altar by the flames. Its entire substance is translated into heat and smoke, which rise to heaven as a sweet savor before the Lord. I always tell believers that if you want to get a sense of what it is to offer an olah, take out of your wallet a $100 bill and light it on fire.